listening to The Hour of the Time, and I'm Pooh.
And I'm Evan.
And I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We've got one heck of a broadcast for you tonight. You're all going to be a part of it, I hope. And we're going to have a lot of fun.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend. Where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson weed. Back in the saddle again. I'm riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only long ride. Back in the saddle again. It's the die-i-o, rocking to and fro. Back in the saddle again. If you die, I go my way, back in the saddle again. Yippee-ki-yi-yo, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Yippee-ki-yi-yay, I go my way, back in the saddle again. Back in the saddle again. I'm back in the saddle again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's good to be back on a large coverage station, ladies and gentlemen. If you'll remember, last night I gave you a little riddle. Two of them, in fact. Actually, it's one riddle with two parts. I'm going to repeat that riddle for you, and then we're going to open the phones and see how many of you guessed what's wrong with it. One of them, a guy comes home. He comes home from work. And he comes in the house, and he boils a pot of water, and he makes himself a cup of tea and sets it on the table and goes outside to feed his cat. And it only takes 5 or 10 minutes to feed the cat. He comes back in the house. This took place at 9:30, by the way. He comes back in the house after only being out for 5 or 10 minutes, and he notices his cup of tea is still hot. Just, you know, it's freshly made. Hot. Hot, 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 hot. But he looks at the clock, and it's 11 o'clock. And so he goes and checks another clock, and by golly, that one says 11 o'clock too. An hour and a half has gone by. But only 5 or 10 minutes has gone by with him. And remember, his cup of tea is still piping hot. Another guy comes home, same time, 9:30 on the same day. Comes home from work. He goes to his Mr. Coffee, and he puts some grounds in the little basket, and he pours a pot of water in there, and he goes outside to feed some animals, and only takes him 5 or 10 minutes to do this. And then he comes back in, and the coffee pot is still perking and dripping. It hasn't yet made a pot of coffee, and he's only been gone 5 or 10 minutes. He looks at the clock, and it's 11 o'clock. And he thinks there's something wrong with the clock, so he goes and looks at a couple of other clocks in the house. They all say 11 o'clock. What's wrong with this picture? That was your assignment last night. Now we'll find out how many of you did your assignment. The number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. If you know what's wrong with these two pictures, call me now. Let's talk about it. I want to get your opinion. I'm going to go over it one more time, just in case you're out there sitting and you really haven't thought about it, or you thought I was joking last night and we weren't going to do anything with this. Remember, this is the hour of the time. We don't do things like that. You hear me throw something out like that, you better know we're going to talk about it the next night. So, one guy comes home from work, 9:30 in the morning. And he walks in, makes himself a cup of tea, piping hot, sets the teacup on the table, goes outside to feed his cat. Takes 5 or 10 minutes to feed the cat. Comes back in, the tea is still piping hot, still there in the teacup, on the saucer, on the table. And he notices that the clock says 11. 11 o'clock. An hour and a half has gone by, but to him, only 5 or 10 minutes has gone by, and the cup of tea is still hot, piping hot. The second one, the guy comes home from work, same time, same exact time. He comes home from work at 9:30. He goes in the house and pours water in his Mr. Coffee and puts some coffee grounds in there and starts a pot of coffee going to percolate and the drip through the grounds. He goes outside to feed some animals. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes to do that. And then he comes back in. And the coffee maker, the Mr. Coffee, has not yet made a pot of coffee. It's still dripping through the grounds. And he looks at the clock, and it's 11 o'clock. The clock says 11 o'clock. To him, only 5 or 10 minutes have gone by. So he runs around the house to see, you know, maybe there's something wrong with his clock. And he finds that the other clocks in the house and his watch all say 11 o'clock. What's wrong with this picture, ladies and gentlemen? The number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Phone's not ringing, so I assume that none of you have found anything wrong with these pictures, with this scenario. I'm going to give you a couple more minutes to think about it while I while I explain to you where this hysteria came from. The other night, someone told me to tune in to Mr. Bell. Someone on the back porch and where we have our shortwave radio, and flipped it over to medium wave and put it on, well, I forget the name of the station, somewhere here in the Midwest, and put it on Art Bell. And lo and behold, people were calling in from the northwest portion of the United States saying that they had all had this same experience, all at the same time on the same day. It was a Thursday of the week previous. But there's something wrong with this, ladies and gentlemen. The first caller actually started a hysterical reaction. And other people began calling, parroting what they heard from the first one. And there's a telltale clue here as to why it could not have happened to anyone. And it's right there in the story. It's right there for everyone to see. How many of you have spotted the discrepancy? Anybody at all? Nobody? I can't believe this. 520-333-4578. Nobody at all has come up with anything wrong with this? Has America lost its ability to reason altogether? Well, let's do this. Let's go to, let's go here.
Slide your fingers up and down my spine. Same old witch clock where your eyes be mine. A chill tingle that I feel inside. Then that elevator starts to slide. Down and down I go. All around I go. Like a wing, the clock's hard. I can stay away, but what could it be? I hear a name, a flame. A flame with something burning desire. That real witch can put out that fire. Why, there's some lover I have planned hope. Gonna make that traded, sneaky traded hope. And every time my nose is done, I shall lay down and down I go.
Well, we finally got somebody coming in here. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Cooper. It's Darlene from Eager.
Hi, Darlene. How are you?
I'm doing fine. By the way, somebody's been on your telephone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well.
That's your little riddle.
Might have been one of those two little girls.
Well, I had my suspicions. But about your two little riddles.
Is this Darlene from the CPA?
That's me.
I haven't seen you in a while.
I know it. When are you coming down?
Well, I'll be down pretty soon. I've got to get some things certified.
Great. We'll be there.
Okay. What's the answer?
Well, for one thing, I do believe these old boys need to take a fast course in telling time, because whenever they walked in, it was 9:30. Turn around and it's 11. They didn't look at the clock to begin with. And something else that struck me funny is that if you're talking about this time elapse thing that is so going around the country so prevalent right now.
That's exactly what they were doing that night. They were causing a hysterical wave to take place across this country that somehow time had leaped forward in a 10-minute period an hour and a half.
Well, that's fine and dandy. But what happened to their coffee pot and their tea? If there is a time lapse, that would have been figured in the time lapse, because that would have been a personal experience and not the coffee and tea experience.
And not the clock either.
No. So therefore, they either didn't check the clock when they walked in, or else they didn't know how to check it to begin with, or else they just went along with the flow. They never, maybe they did it on purpose. I mean, that's a way to get attention, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called mass hysteria.
Oh, yeah, and you can plant anything in anybody's mind.
You sure can. They were doing it again last night. You know, it was so interesting to me. I thought that I would tune in now every night and see what's going on with this phenomenon, and they did it again last night. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to keep listening. I'll let somebody else call in.
Thank you for calling, Darlene.
Bye-bye.
520-333-4578. Let's see if anybody else has any comments on this, what do we call it? Phenomena? Anybody else spot what Darlene spotted? Does anybody else understand why this could not possibly have happened? Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper, how are you, Steve?
Fine.
Well, I'll put my two cents in.
Okay.
I figure that basically, it can only occur two ways. In order for, I have to presume that the clocks are probably quartz. Nobody uses basically wind-up clocks anymore.
Well, it doesn't matter whether they did or didn't. But go ahead. Anyway, this is your explanation. I don't mean to.
So I'm presuming that most of the clocks are electronic. Therefore, if it's electronic, in order for it to be just those two individuals, but if it was a larger area, let's presume, they would all have to receive the same signal at the same time.
Yes.
Well, in order for them to do that, basically that means a technology that has to come from somewhere that can basically affect all those people at the same time.
Okay.
The only other possible way, which basically means creation by man. The only other way that I can possibly figure out would be if the planet itself somehow speeded up. Now, that would be a physical phenomenon. My opinion, basically, only God can do that, and that obviously did not happen.
No.
So the only other likelihood that is something that was created by man,
yeah.
Either on the electronics of themselves or on the people's perception of the electronics.
But there's another thing here that you didn't pick it up, and Darlene didn't pick it up. If it only happened on the northwest coast of the United States, up in Washington State, as a matter of fact, if it only happened up in Washington State, and those people were jumped ahead in time an hour and a half, and it didn't happen to anybody else in the country, are they still an hour and a half ahead of us?
No.
Of course not. I just love this. I absolutely love it.
No.
But let me ask you something else. What about the discrepancy between, see, the guy, these two guys, there was really a whole string of people. They were calling in all night. All saying that this happened to them. And they all had basically the same story. I came home, it was 9:30, it was like they were copying off of the first guy, and they probably were. But what about the discrepancy? The guy thought that only 5 or 10 minutes had gone by. The clocks somebody had, or something, had moved the clocks ahead an hour and a half, but yet the coffee pot and the tea were not affected at all. They didn't. They weren't zipped ahead any time whatsoever.
That's the best I can offer you, Bill.
Okay. Thank you.
I can offer you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
520-333-4578. Let's see if what you've got to say about it. I think it's incredible. Mass hysteria. So you see how somebody can create mass hysteria with this baloney? And pretty soon you've got the whole world running around chasing their tail, looking, jumping over rainbows, and talking about, oh, time has speeded up, and we all lost an hour and a half, and it just disappeared, and all that kind of stuff. You see, it couldn't possibly have happened, ladies and gentlemen. You see, if it affected the people and the clocks, you see, I can see how something like that can happen in someone's mind. You see, you can be lost in your thoughts and think only a couple of moments have gone by when actually quite a bit of time has gone by. I think that's happened to just about all of us. That can happen, and it can fool us, and we can think that, oh my gosh, time sped ahead or something, but it really didn't. You see, that can happen. But even if time jumped ahead an hour and a half, it could not have possibly affected the clocks, which are physical items, and not the tea or the coffee pot, which are also physical items. Anybody else want to put in their 2 cents worth on this? 520-333-4578. What they did was, you see, they had been talking about time, I guess, on previous episodes, and all of a sudden this caller called in and said he'd lost an hour and a half of time in this manner, and everybody got excited, and all the listeners jumped on the bandwagon, and then, before you know it, guess what, folks? Everybody had lost an hour and a half of time. They all had the same thought. You see, if time actually jumped ahead an hour and a half, and everybody lost that block of time, nothing would happen to physical objects. Clocks are physical, mechanical, and are electronic, electrical objects. The hands would not have moved more than 5 or 10 minutes. You see? The only way that you would be able to tell would be by astronomical observation. Time does not affect physical objects. Time is extremely difficult to put your finger on. But I know that if I stop a clock, physically stop it from working, as time goes by, the hands do not spin around by themselves. The clock moves because the mechanism inside the clock is moving. The coffee pot perks because certain mechanical things are taking place. Water is being heated. It boils. It evaporates. It condenses and flows through the grounds into the pot. Even if time jumped ahead, it would not affect the physical action taking place in that coffee pot, just as it did not affect the physical action of the man walking outside to feed the cat and walking back in. I sat there mesmerized at the absolute ignorance and stupidity of these millions of people who fell right in line with this baloney. And a wave of mass hysteria swept the nation. It was incredible to listen to. People got excited. Some people were a little scared. Some of you listening to this broadcast were listening to that broadcast, and you were all caught up in it also. How does this happen? Well, folks, it happens all the time. The same thing happened again last night. It was incredible. We finished with the broadcast. We went out and did some things with the family, and put the girls to bed, went out on the back porch, and tuned in to Art Bell again, and guess what? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? Wait until you find out what was going on. This is absolutely incredible. And you're going to find out in just a second, because I'm going to let you know. You're going to listen here now. You ready? You ready for this, folks?
Orson Welles.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that are to our minds as ours are to the beasts in the jungle, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us. In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment. Near the end of October, business was better. The war scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in on radios.
What was that, folks? What was that? And when did it happen? Let's hear from you. Who knows? How many of you know, or who knows, what that's from, and when it happened, and what it caused? 520-333-4578. We need audience participation tonight to make this a great broadcast in the tradition of the hour of the time. 520-333-4578. Somebody out there, get up off your couch, dial the number, and tell me what that was that we just heard and what it means, if you know. Now, if nobody knows, if nobody calls, I got to tell you, this country is in deeper problem, deeper trouble, deeper doo-doo than I ever thought, than I ever dreamed. Because somehow there wasn't a loss of an hour and a half of time. There was a loss of millions of brain cells. 520-333-4578. Nobody is calling. Can you believe that, ladies and gentlemen? Which means that either nobody knows, in which case you're in deep trouble, or you're all afraid to pick up the phone and dial, which means about exactly the same thing. So, just in case, we'll skip ahead here a little bit, and we'll do a little bit more. So, just hold on to your horses. Whoops. I goofed. Okay, here we go. Got to cue this up. It's on a CD. CDs are hard to cue, folks. So just bear with me here for a minute. We're going to queue up again and see what happens. Only going to take a second. We'll go from there.
Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. We now return you to the music of Ramon Rocchello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
Good evening, you're on the air. Hello?
I know what that radio broadcast is.
What is it?
War of the Worlds.
Okay.
And it was done in the, I can't remember, well, I wasn't around then, but it was done in the 30s, I'm pretty sure. And it was done by, the actor, I can't remember his name.
I'll give you that, since they said his name at the beginning. It's Orson Welles.
Orson Welles, right, right.
And the Mercury Theater.
Yeah.
On?
Actually, I've actually got that on record myself.
Uh huh. So they did it on CBS. And what was the effect of that?
Well, it caused a mass panic and hysteria all around the country.
You can say that again.
That's what I've heard, at least.
Yes.
Before my time. Great to hear you back on the radio again. I used to listen to you on WWCR. It seemed like it was about 2 years ago. And I saw on the internet you were coming back, and I've been listening to you every night.
Well, great. Well, tonight's going
to
be audience participation, so if nobody calls, you call, okay?
Okay.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you for calling. Well, he's right. It's the War of the Worlds. Now all we need is the date, and we need to know what happened because of this. Let's hear some more.
Ladies and gentlemen, following on the news given in our bulletin a moment ago, the Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. Due to the unusual nature of this occurrence, we have arranged an interview with a noted astronomer, Professor Pearson, who will give us his views on this event. In a few moments, we will take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, New Jersey. We return you until then to the music of Ramon Rocchello and his orchestra.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mr. Cooper. It's just War of the Worlds, Orson Welles. It was October 30th, 1938, that the broadcast took place, and what happened was it scared my mother-in-law so bad that she had my sister-in-law on that evening.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else happened?
Well, I believe that Orson Welles came out the next day and made a big apology for it, for scaring everybody so bad. But
yeah, he actually got in a lot of trouble for that, didn't he?
Yeah, but it didn't really affect his career or anything, so I don't know how much trouble was trouble, you know.
It made him famous. It made his career soared.
Sure, and
sure. He became
so,
the genius. He became the genius of radio, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later the genius of Hollywood. Genius of motion pictures.
Well, I'm going to add to everybody else. It's great to hear you back on here, where we can get you.
Thank you.
And we'll keep listening. I'll get off here and let somebody else get in.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, folks. Anybody else got anything they want to add? Anybody else know anything about this? Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. Jim in Virginia.
Hi, Jim.
It's really good to hear you on the short wave again.
Thank you.
Was the date correct on that, 1938?
Yes, 1938.
Okay. From what I understand, reading about the thing that Orson Welles did there, and it was the story was originally written by H.G. Wells, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Is it true that they were related?
Yes, but distantly. Not closely related, but they both belong to the same club, so to speak. H.G. Wells wrote a book called The New World Order before World War II started.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Basically, my personal take on it is that I believe the whole experiment, if you will, I think, ended up justifying what we now call the national security state. I don't know, maybe that's reading way too much into it, but they proved, quote-unquote, that the masses are panicked, ignorant, stupid, etc. And
Cattle is the word they use.
Excuse me, man, thanks for the correction. You're right. I mean, just listening to the opening part of what you played there was evidence right there. I mean, the oratory was so condescending to begin with. I mean, that should have been everybody's first clue right there.
Sure.
At any rate, that's my spin on it all.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Bye.
Well, let's go to the next installment. Getting excited, folks? Isn't this fun?
We are ready now to take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Richard Pearson, famous astronomer. We take you now to Princeton, New Jersey.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carl Phillips speaking to you from the Observatory at Princeton. I'm standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanism of the huge telescope. Ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. I ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides the ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communications. During this period, he is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questions?
At any time, Mr. Thorpe.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in the blue sea. Transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now because Mars happens to be at the point nearest the Earth in opposition, as we call it.
In your opinion, what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips.
Hey.
Although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars?
I'd say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
And yet, how do you account for these gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Phillips, I cannot account for it.
Oh, by the way, Professor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from the Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems a safe enough distance.
Thank you.
Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. While he reads it, let me remind you that we are speaking to you from the observatory in Princeton, New Jersey, where we are interviewing the world-famous astronomer, Professor Pearson. One moment, please. Professor Pearson has passed me a message which he has just received. Professor, may I read the message to the listening audience?
Certainly.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall read you a wire addressed to Professor Pearson from Dr. Gray of the Natural History Museum, New York. Quote, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Princeton. Please investigate. Signed, Lloyd Gray, Chief of Astronomical Division. Unquote. Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibly have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
Thank you, Professor. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to you from the Observatory at Princeton, bringing you a special interview with Professor Pearson, noted astronomer. This is Carl Phillips speaking. We are returning you now to our New York studio.
And there you have that. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? How much of this have you all witnessed being played out on radio and television for the last how many years? Let's find out. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. It's Cal and Denise here.
Hi, Cal.
How you doing?
You got the answer to this?
I believe it's to acclimatize all the general public into believing little green men. Who speaks for planet Earth? And it's happening all over.
Well, you're on the right track there, but I'm referring strictly to War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds right now.
Okay.
Okay. Now, they did this broadcast in 1 hour on October the 30th, 1938.
Yeah.
They've been replaying it over years up to the present time.
I think it's a test to see how gullible the general populace is.
Well, they already know how gullible they are.
Oh, they hook, line, and sinker.
What they're doing is they're convincing them that it's true.
Correct.
Haven't we been acclimatized?
My whole generation has grown up on cartoons of UFOs and little green men and all kinds of freaky stuff.
Sure. Isn't that a way of saying what Orson Welles said in the first clip that I played for you?
Yep, that's correct.
If they can convince us that extraterrestrials are real and they're out there.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that the same thing that he said at the beginning of War of the Worlds?
That's right. That's right. I was sitting here with a paper and pencil and dissecting that whole story, picking apart the BS lines, and I just kept trying to hit the call-in number on redial over and over again. And I looked over at Denise and I said, "This is just like War of the Worlds," and then her jaw dropped when you played it. But I think that's what it is. It's just getting people more in my generation figure it out.
It is. And Mars?
Yeah.
Instead of saying that they saw a jet of flame erupt on Mars and something shoot off of the planet Mars, what have they been telling us? There's a face
on Mars.
There's a city on Mars. There's pyramids on Mars.
That
and guess what?
I was in my pancakes this morning, but I didn't pay no attention to that.
There's a mathematical similarity and a geometry that fits with the pyramids at Giza.
And a quarter will get you another freak sideshow.
Uh-oh.
I think they're getting just everyone ready for the greatest show on Earth.
Oh, this is the greatest show on Earth. I've got a front row seat, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I just am this. I roll with laughter.
I've got some of those Mars rocks, but they're in my barbecue grill.
They're all over my yard. Everywhere. Speaking of,
I sat there and I was going, oh, boy.
Speaking of little critters, two of them just walked in here.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. You know, that's my opinion on it.
Okay, this is Calvin.
My whole generation has just been raised on cartoons and UFOs and little green men, and heck, you got Star Trek, and you got the greatest special effects now at the movies.
Oh, yeah.
You can't tell that from a fake, and hey, what they've got hiding in the woodwork, nobody knows.
Oh, wait till we get into what they were doing last night on the Art Bell Show. You're going to just love it.
Well, it was a hard shot to try to get through to you, but I'm glad I called.
Okay.
Okay, y'all take care out there.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
520-333-4578. Let's hear your comments. What have you got to say about this? Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr.
Cooper. And you need
to call from Missouri.
Okay, you need to put your mouth in front of your phone and talk really loud.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
That's a little better.
Okay, I'm calling from Missouri, and I'm glad you're back on the air. I really missed you
Thank you.
I just want to put my two cents in. I think with this Art Bell thing that they did the other night, it sounds to me as though they can just tell anybody anything, and they believe it, and they follow suit, which is going to come in handy when all this stuff seems to go down in the United States. They're going to tell you something, and you're going to believe it, and you're going to just follow suit.
By golly, you certainly are one heck of an intelligent woman. I'm so glad you called this show.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. 520-333-4578. She's absolutely correct, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Darlene again.
Hi, Darlene.
Well, for one thing, you have to remember that back in Orson Welles' time, the main source of information was the radio. Yep. It wasn't the television.
That's correct.
But anything that was said was taken for gospel.
Yes, just like today.
Yes. That's why whenever it came on the air, there was mass hysteria because they didn't realize it was a hoax.
Yeah.
And that's why when so much stuff is put on the air, on TV now, we take it as gospel. If it's on the air, these people must know what they're talking about.
Most people don't believe anything is true unless they see it on television or hear it on the radio.
Absolutely. And even if something was to happen, if 1% of 1% of these people actually had it happen, they would be crazy to tell anybody about it. Because for their ears trying to brainwash him, telling him it wasn't true.
Uh-huh.
And for another thing, everybody would think they were crazy. I mean, it's illogical. I mean, I would keep my mouth shut if something happened. But the fact is that if we hear it or see it on TV, it must be true. We haven't the initiative to check it out for ourselves or to even use our own common knowledge.
Boy, you hit that nail right on the head.
Hi, Darlene. Woo!
Hi, Doyle.
Hey.
And as far as logic goes, with the people I deal with, I find it extremely interesting how many people have totally lost the ability to use their brain and to logically think, well, that can't be. And that's what we need to do. We need to scrutinize these people. We need to say, hey, you know, that is really coming off the wall. But people will not do it these days.
Well, you know what a college education used to be, Darlene?
What?
They used to teach people all the different philosophies. And then the main thrust of all of that was to teach them to question everything.
Now they teach them to accept whatever they're told.
Now they teach them Marxist Leninism and nothing else, and they teach them to accept what they're told, never make waves, never question anything, and don't in your wildest dreams challenge authority. That's called slavery.
Yeah, and the problem is that we have fallen into step with it so well that they have very little competition.
Yep, you're right.
Yes. Hey, it was good talking to you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
520-333-4578. Before we play this last clip, we'll try to get two or three more calls in. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I need you to talk real loud. Are you on one of those Rome phones?
Nope, I'm sure not. Okay.
That's a little better, yeah.
Okay, this is Craig from Michigan.
Hi, Craig.
Wasn't Orson Welles' little wasn't that responsible for some new regulations?
Yes, absolutely. It caused new regulations to be fomented, saying that you couldn't do those kinds of broadcasts anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words...
One more little control thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it got a lot... It gained a lot more control over the media. we have really barely touched on the effects of that broadcast. You know, the next day the stock market plunged.
Oh, really?
A couple of people committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. I heard that.
The people in Grover's Mill, New Jersey, you know, there really is a town, Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Correct.
They went out of their homes with shotguns and rifles and forgot what their own city looked like. They shot the hell out of their own city water tower, thinking it was one of these giant alien tripods.
Right, I heard that. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it cost them a lot of money to fix it, too.
Insane. Hey, good to hear you back, Bill.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're having quite a bit of problems getting through Orson Welles' jamming there on the other station, but you're doing good now.
Good. Good.
Good night. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
520-333-4578. We'll take one or two more calls, and then we'll do this last clip, and then we'll get into what happened last night. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Dan from Indiana.
Hi, Dan.
It reminds me of a couple things. And the War of the Worlds thing, of course, it's a reporter talking to scientists, but these are, quote-unquote, respected persons, you know, so we pay attention to them.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of reminds me of, like, when you're reading a newspaper or a magazine, and you'll find an apparent article, and it's got scientific proof of what it's talking about. But if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the word advertisement.
Advertisement, that's right.
But it's really just a way of selling something.
Sure.
And it also reminds me a little bit the example you gave with the coffee and the tea before.
Mm-hmm.
Of, I don't know, maybe 10 years or a little more, when there were more wind-up watches before the digital watches. You'd every now and then have some psychic appear on some TV talk show, and he'd say, well, everybody, you know, find a watch that no longer works and grab it, and I'm going to do my amazing psychic stuff, and your watch will work. And so maybe, you know, theoretically, maybe, you know, 1,500 people grab an old watch that hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And just in the course of picking up and jostling it, maybe it's, you know, it's got the mechanism. And
yeah, the secondhand goes around four or five times.
Yeah, and people have this experience, and they call in, and it's like the people listening, wow, you know, it's like people call from all over the United States, and he really made their watch work, and now they give credence to this BS, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, this sort of comes down to Henry Kissinger. I can't quote it exactly, but he had made some speech. It may have been to the United Nations, maybe not, but it was Henry Kissinger. And he had said something to the effect of, you know, right now if we tried to bring UN troops into the United States, the people would not stand for it. Yet if they thought that there was some foreign threat, whether real or imagined, they would welcome it then. And so if they thought the Martians were coming down or whatever, and the news authorities told them that they were being threatened by this and the world was at stake, they'd beg for it. The movie Independence Day was a perfect example of that, where the Martians or whoever had come.
Sure.
But the whole world had to band together to fight this threat. And these all go along the same lines and have the same red going through them.
They're preparing the collective consciousness, as they call it, of the public to accept such a thing. And Henry Kissinger did say that. He said it several places. He said it on television.
That's your wave, and it's so good to hear you again.
Well, thank you.
Bill, have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Okay, we'll take one more call, and we'll do the last clip, 520-333-4578. I was sort of taken aback there because the tape reached the end. And my headphones are plugged into the recorder, so I lost the sound of my earphones, and for a second I thought maybe we were losing power, but we weren't. We just have to flip the tape. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Louise in Chicago.
Hi, Louise.
And I would say that a study as a little primer, so to speak, for all this could, a good place to start would probably be that synthesis of the Russian handbook on psychopolitics.
Absolutely, and there's a link directly to it on my website.
Yes, I know, I've seen it. and who knows, that's pretty old. Who knows what refinements have been added?
Oh, yes, and not just by the Russians either.
Oh, no, I think this has actually been going on as long as tyranny has been going on. It's certainly a tool and a weapon.
Sure, behind the scenes, they're all of one mind anyway. They want world government.
Oh, absolutely, and there is absolutely nothing that they won't do to get it. They're completely shameless. And, well, I think somebody tried to get a message out on one of the, what I call, mainstream Ministry of Propaganda stations. There was a video that was out. I think it was on channel ABC or NBC or something called When Cars Attack. And this was done to look like, you know, there's this secret device in a car called a hydroxylator. And it causes cars to commit suicide. It causes them to eject their drivers. It causes them to drive by themselves.
That sounds like fun.
And they did this in such a manner that without their silly little disclaimer that actually admitted that it was a bunch of lies, it would convince the vast majority of the generally dumb public that this is really going on.
Can you imagine,
Doyle? So somebody's trying to get a message out.
Can you imagine driving along, just, you know, minding your own business, listening to the radio, all of a sudden.
Yeah! I reject this driver, and the cops are all of these police chases and stuff. They're showing this one guy's holding both hands up. The truck is driving by itself. I have no control. It's got a mind of its own. That's another one from the Twilight Zone, by the way, called The Thing About Machines. So, you know, nothing new under the sun.
Nothing at all. Absolutely right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, get ready. Going to hear the final clip here before the, and this will give you a clue as to what happened last night.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morse of Macmillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, nearer home, comes a special bulletin from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. The flash in the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene, and we'll have our commentator, Carl Phillips, give you a word picture of the scene as soon as he can reach there from Princeton. In the meantime, we take you to the Hotel Martinet in Brooklyn, where Bobby Millett and his orchestra are offering a program of dance music.
Okay, who's got some ideas about that? Good evening. You're on the air. Yeah.
I just thought it might be a herd mentality on the part of most people, even on the part of most of us, who, even though you said something was wrong with that scenario, we just try to find a way to correctly explain everything you said, even though there obviously, like you said, was something wrong, and you just, because of the herd mentality, couldn't pick it up.
Well, that's what mass hysteria is. Mass hysteria is the stampede mentality of a herd of cattle. A couple of, you know, they're all grazing peacefully on the plain, and then all of a sudden, one of them sees a rattlesnake and snorts and bellows and starts running, and then all the rest of them start running, and they just follow the leader blindly. The lemmings do that right over the edge of a cliff to their death every year. Well, you see, I don't believe that answer. I think that he intentionally set out to cause exactly what he caused. I believe that it was an experiment to find out if an alien threat from space would be believable. It was later outlined in a report called the Report from Iron Mountain. And you're going to hear what President Ronald Reagan said about all this during his presidency. Yeah. Well, it doesn't keep repeating itself. This is an agenda. People keep repeating it for a purpose.
Right.
We barely hear you. You got to talk loud.
I said, well, many, most of them are too gullible to see it for what it is.
Yeah. Not just gullible, but absence of the ability to reason. Absolutely. Central Intelligence Agency, Office of Special, Office of Strategic Services, OSS.
Was he connected with some sort of psychological warfare, too, at that time? Or?
Well, there wasn't any real psychological warfare, anything at that time. There was a propaganda branch, which he was very solidly connected with, yes. And you're right, that happened on CBS.
I just wonder if there was a connection between...
Absolutely. You're welcome. Thank you for calling. So you heard the last clip there. Who knows what happened last night? Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a listening to your show here. First of all, I don't think anything happens without an agenda, as you said, I believe.
Yes.
But also, I think it's quite interesting. Previous to this, have you ever heard of the Frankfurt School in Germany? The Frankfurt Critical Radical Socialists? There's a school of thought called the Critical Theory.
I think I know where you're going, but go ahead with it.
Well, one thing that they did, you know, they were actually socialists. But one of the things that they put forth, and this is something I read somewhere.
But wait a minute. Why don't you explain, what does socialist mean? See, a lot of people just banner this word around. They don't understand what that word means.
Well, I shouldn't even use the word socialist, because in some context, in some...
It fits perfectly.
It's actually good. The Marxist. In other words, Marxist...
No, you missed what I was getting at.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Socialists, the socialist program, the socialist agenda, the Marxist-Leninist agenda, is to engineer the perfect society through propaganda and manipulation of the masses.
And that's exactly what radio and television and newspapers have always been. In fact, the democracy is a perfect institution for the use of mass media.
That's why V.I. Lenin said democracy is indispensable to socialism, and Karl Marx said democracy is the road to socialism.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
The part about the Frankfurt School is they actually did studies as to not show here than see them. But what basic responses are gotten from various situations? Almost sort of like what our modern day advertising does today, the way that it's able to get millions of people to buy things.
Yeah.
And this was an early experiment back in the 20s, and how you can get the masses to participate in a certain agenda, because, of course, they're masses. But the point is, I think it was one of the earlier experiments, just like what you said, and I think Orson Welles, whether he knew it or not, was participating in one of those experiments.
Absolutely. You know, he was a Fabian socialist. And so was his relative, H.G. Wells.
Well, it doesn't surprise me having anything out of Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's somewhat socialistic. And it just amazes me as you read the newspapers, you look at television, and people today, and I must admit, I used to think this too. I mean,
well, we all did. We all did. I wasn't born with this knowledge. I mean, I didn't start finding out what was really going on and really how to think and why I should be thinking until somebody made a big mistake in the Navy and stuck me in the Office of Naval Intelligence and put me on the briefing team for Admiral Clary. And I got to see things that nobody will probably ever see, even at the end of time. And that's what woke me up. I mean, I came wide awake. It was like somebody threw a bucket. It's like somebody picked me up, actually, and threw me into the water at the North Pole.
Very interesting. And that's, if you look at the critical theory of the Frankfurt School, and how there was something called like the Orphan Annie kind of experiment that they did with radio, you know, where all these people were in a room with little buttons, and they, you know, you push when you like it and when you don't. They do this way back when. But they took this beyond just the, they like people when they cry or this or that. But they got certain concepts that people like, the herd, of which, of course, unfortunately, I'm part of every now and then. And today, and I'm sure you might agree with me, it is so sophisticated with television and newspapers today that the masses, they're just mesmerized.
Let's call them people. Masses is a socialist term designed to dehumanize and thus strip away the importance of individuality and individual rights.
Like collateral damage when you blow up a city.
Yes. So let's call them people because that's what they are.
Exactly. Well, I thank you. Enjoy your show. And I'll let somebody else talk. And this is quite interesting. Don't get this on public radio.
Oh, no. But if you listen to the hour of the time, you'll find out that this is the kind of stuff that we do all the time. You will never hear this broadcast on any night that you don't learn something.
And as for Art Bell, I have no idea who this fellow is, but...
Oh, we do.
It sounds like somebody interested in listening to unless I wanted to see.
Oh, it's actually quite entertaining if you understand what's really going on there. If you get caught up in it, you're lost. I got to tell you. It's all over for you.
I got to say, any newspaper, television, or for the most part, radio, or things that I read, I'm a skeptic. I have to see some type of verification.
Good for you. Hold on. Hold that thought for just a minute. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. Okay, now we can go back.
I thought we shouldn't stay on much longer because I'm sure there's other people that want to express their opinion.
Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
520-333-4578 is the number. What have you got to say about this? Anybody made the connection with the last clip and what happened last night on the Art Bell Show? Good evening. You're on the air. Okay.
I had one take on this. I wondered what you thought. It's the Mercury Theater that perpetrated this. A little spin on the mysteries. The messenger of the gods.
Absolutely. Not only that, but it has a lot to do with alchemy, which is a part of the mysteries.
Where
they had to hide what they were really doing, their secret religion of humanism, from the Catholic Church. So they pretended to be experimenting with metals to change them into gold. The truth of the matter was, the search for the Philosopher's Stone was the perfection of the race. the development of the humanist religion and the apotheosis of mankind. Mercury was an essential ingredient in the search for the Philosopher's Stone.
Okay, that's why I'm glad I want to throw this question up to you, because that occurred to me a long time ago.
Okay.
There's always an underlying little whim that the mysteries like to tout in front of the masses. Oops, I use that word again. In front of the sheeple.
Yeah.
But their secret language. And they're always rubbing our noses in their little game they play. Right in front of everybody who knows.
Oh, yes, they are.
The far majority of people never having the opportunity to educate themselves as to what it is they are really talking about.
Yes.
For instance, the space shuttles.
Uh-huh.
Like that one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I throw that in front of people that I'm trying to teach this to, and I watch their eyes open up and their jaw start to drop, and I know I'm starting to make sense to them.
Yeah, and they get this feeling in their stomach and their solar plexus like somebody just punched them. I've seen it before.
But let's see, that's all I had to add at the moment. I would figure that, that could not be an accident. Mercury is a messenger.
No, it's not an accident.
No accident.
Not an accident at all.
All right, well, hang in there. Enjoying your show.
What was his first most famous film?
Ooh. What, Citizen Kane?
Citizen Kane. And what was the message of that film?
You've got me on that.
Well, maybe somebody else will get it.
Okay. That's good. Let's open up another topic.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. See you, Bill.
Okay. Well, nobody's made the connection between what happened last night on Art Bell and the last clip we played. Does anybody can make that connection? And also, what was the theme? What was the message of Citizen Kane? Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill.
Yeah.
Dan in Colorado here.
Hi, Ann.
I'm so glad I can get you now on the frequency that we can receive.
Good.
After several years. I wanted to get your opinion on the Y2K Millennium Bug, and do you think it's going to be as serious as...
We're not on that subject tonight, but just in a nutshell, no. I think it's a ruse. I think it's, I don't think there's anything to it at all, period.
Oh, very interesting. All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome. 520-333-4578. I think the effect of everybody thinking that something's going to happen is going to have a tremendous impact upon the future. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Mike in LaBelle, Florida. Good evening, Bill.
Hi, Mike.
Well, one of the takes that wasn't the Orson Welles radio broadcast, wasn't that on a full moon?
It was on Halloween.
Halloween. I'm sorry. I kind of go with what you had said.
Or actually, it was the night before Halloween. It was the 30th.
Okay.
Halloween's the 31st.
Do you know if that was a full moon night?
No, we may have that in our files because we always check those kinds of things, but I didn't bring that out with me here.
I remember this is a few years ago that someone made a comment, and I've heard this before, that full moon nights that there's more crime in the United States just because of...
I've heard that also. I've also seen studies that debunk it.
They debunk it, okay.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, I don't know if it's true or not. I've heard it. I've seen studies that say it's true. I've heard police officers tell me that it's true. I have also seen studies that say it's not true.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with, I think it's going to happen just like you had agreed to this October somewhere, meaning this next month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think something tremendous is going to happen. Next month.
Art Bell is just trying to facilitate us into moving us into all these humanistic type fears that they're trying to build and play on. We call this down here Hurricane Bell because they're not supporting Jeb Bush like we're supposed to.
Did you hear the last clip that I played?
No, I didn't.
Okay, let me play that again. Because everybody is, this has all gone over everybody's head, I guess. So let me play it again and see if I can get some kind of reaction going here. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here's the clip again. Listen carefully, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morris of Macmillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, nearer home, comes a special bulletin from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. The flash in the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene.
Yeah, I heard it over my radio. I can't draw the line on it, but the thing is that we're not going to give up here, not anything at all.
Good.
And I'm just telling you how it is. Yeah. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
People have to draw a line in the sand
yeah.
and make that decision.
Well, I drew mine years ago. I'm willing to die for it. I'm not, nobody's crossing that line, and I'm not taking any more of their crap again. I'm not going to put up with it. I'm not going to give up my rights, my freedoms. I'm not going to watch my country go down the tubes for some Fabian socialist dream utopian world that is nothing more but a disguised enslavement of the entire human race.
By the way, it just might be a coincidence because of Hurricane Bill down here, but for the past hour I've been trying to call in, and I've been getting a recording that this phone number is not in order no more.
What, this number?
Yeah.
Well, that's not true, and if that's what they're doing, I'll get on the phone company tomorrow.
I just thought I'd like
and
to
I'll,
know, and there's also a jamming signal that's just splattering.
No, don't start that with me. You tell that to WBCQ.
Oh, no, it's from 74.
No. Tell that to WBCQ, not me. I can't do anything about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Those reports go to WBCQ and the FCC, not me. Not me. Not me, not me, not me. I can't do anything about it. I'm doing everything that I can possibly do. So you want me to do more, I can't do it. You do it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Regarding the Art Bell show last night and what parallel we hear on the recording.
Yeah.
I had heard from somebody that last night on the Art Bell show, somebody from the Washington area or the northwest part of our country.
Isn't it strange? It happened in the northwest again.
Again, the same place. Anyway, that green fireballs were descending out of the atmosphere like meteors or something akin to it, and landing. Now, this is what I heard. I hadn't heard the broadcast myself, but that's...
Well, you hit it right on the head. Okay. That's what they were saying. The first report was that a huge green ball had traversed the atmosphere from left to right across the sky, across the state of Washington, and everybody saw it for a long period of time. As time went on and people began to call in, what we heard was that they saw something all of a sudden appear as a pinpoint of light and like burn through the atmosphere and disappear in just like 2 seconds, 2 or 3 seconds. And then Art Bell made the comment that there were no meteor showers this month and that these couldn't possibly be meteorites. And then people started calling in and all reporting that they saw these things. And then people got hysterical. The same thing happened again. Mass hysteria took over. And people were calling in and saying, you know, I saw something like that too just a few minutes ago. I thought it was a meteorite until I heard this program.
In fact, Bill, I was at work last night, and occasionally I can listen to the Art Bell show over the internet, but I'm usually busy.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, some guy came in from a smoke break and said, and he was the guy that I initially heard this from, and he was out there looking for UFOs in the sky.
Yeah.
For hearing this.
Yeah. See, they had everyone thinking that the aliens were landing. That's exactly what was going on.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is absolutely amazing. And what was even more amazing is how you could watch this hysteria spread, not watch it, but hear it through the radio as people called in and their voice began to get excited. And you could tell they were hysterical and they were afraid and they were seeing things that did not exist. Now, I get Astronomy Magazine and I get Telescope Magazine because we purchased a really fine telescope for part of the children's education. And so they are learning astronomy. And in these magazines, they always have the projected meteor showers for each month. This month is an unbelievably heavy month for meteors entering the atmosphere.
Now, isn't that something that people would just swallow that comment from Art Bell and not even question? It just astounds me.
Yeah. And to listen to him build the hysteria. He was playing on it and building it.
Oh, he's very good at what he does.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's very good at what he does. Anyway, just a little side note, being personal. I've always referred to him as Art Snell because there was always something rotten about it.
Well, you know, recognize it for what it is and understand that he has an agenda. And if you read his book, The Quickening, you'll catch on to what his agenda is really quick.
Yeah, I've gotten the gist of just by occasionally hearing him talk about it, and, you know, you can kind of get the meaning of it. I haven't actually read it myself, but frankly, I don't know if I could stand the indigestion.
Well,
but I understand what you're saying.
Let me tell you something. If you're going to step on a battlefield with an enemy, you better know how the enemy fights, thinks, what he says, what he feels, how he takes a bath, and what his agenda is.
I can't agree more.
If you don't, you can't fight him. You can't fight the enemy if you don't know the enemy.
Absolutely. That's a lesson for everybody. Absolutely.
And make no mistake about it. Art Bell is the enemy.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Bill.
You're welcome. Hi, girls. What do you got there? Come on in. Oh, you made some. Hey, that's really neat. Wow. Yeah, hey, that's great. You guys have really been busy. Well, they made a couple of horses, folks, out of sticks and paper and string. The horses have tails and heads. Let me see yours, Allie. Oh, wow. What a great horse. This is great. What are you drinking there? You got some apple juice? Is it good? You won't even take it out of your mouth for a second to even tell me if it's good? Is it good? You can't talk anymore?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay, these are great. I really like those. Those are wonderful.
You thought we would come stay with you guys for a little bit.
Well, you can if you want. Okay. Alvin, you want to sit there and drink your apple juice? Okay. The girls came to visit us. And on with the show. So anyway, that's what was going on last night. It was an incredible show. I mean, Doyle and I sat there and laughed and laughed and laughed. And
remember the report from the local major interstate?
Oh, yeah.
Papa?
Yeah, talk about that. Though.
Yeah, there was one call in a report, a guy that saw strange lights and fireballs from, I-40, which is just north of us.
Yeah, we're sitting there looking. We're sitting at the table looking directly at that sky. I mean, nothing could be in that sky without us seeing it.
Yeah, and all that was black.
And what was there?
Black and stars.
Nothing was there. Absolutely nothing was there. It was more mass hysteria.
Yeah.
It was incredible. 520-333-4578 is the number. If you get a report when you try to call that this phone is disconnected, call the operator and tell them it's not, because I'm on the radio right now and people are calling in here and there's nothing wrong with the phone. 520-333-4578. Boy. So, you know, this is just to, you know, we're not doing this to tell you not to listen to Art Bell or anybody else. My admonition is listen to everyone, read everything, believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. And I mean prove it. I don't mean, go read somebody's book and believe what it says just because somebody says it in the book. You know, somebody wrote the book, and it's no different than them standing in front of you and telling it to you. You see, you have to check everything out. Just because it's in the newspaper or in a book or on television, or on the radio, does not make it true. In fact, chances are, it's not. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, this is Dan from Indiana. I just want to say, when I was trying to call you before, I pressed redial again and again and again, and you were trying to get a call, and I was beginning to think, it's like, you know, Bill, you fool, you didn't hang up the phone, because I can't get through it.
Well, you know, a couple times I haven't.
Well, that might have been, I don't know, I just wanted to pass that on, just in case.
Well, sometimes, you know, I make mistakes.
Well, I don't know if that was. I just wanted to say, because you were looking for a call, saying nobody's calling, and it was
Yeah. Okay.
But
Thank you. If I make a mistake, folks, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. There's no hesitation here. We're human. We are really human. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey. God, I'm sorry. How you doing, Bill?
Good.
God, I haven't heard you in so long, and somebody came on Art Bell the other night and gave your the frequency for the shortwave channel that you're on.
And I bet Art Bell was just gritting his teeth and cringing.
Yeah, he wasn't real happy about it.
Oh, he doesn't like me at all.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't like...
But I do.
He doesn't like people to tell the truth.
I want to tell you what, brother. You're the one that turned me on to what's happening in the world in 1991. And I came to Atlanta to see you speak.
Oh.
The best day of my life. I just, getting to meet you was a real thrill.
Well, thank you. I always enjoyed speaking in Atlanta. There are some really, really wonderful people there.
Well, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. And I got to tell you something, Bill. I have seen a green fireball.
Yeah, I have too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My girlfriend and I were standing watching the fireworks year before last. Uh-huh.
I've also seen orange fireballs and red fireballs. And I saw one spectacular meteorite one time that entered the atmosphere and changed all different colors as it came down. And it must have been huge because it was huge. I mean, standing there watching, and that was out at Area 51. It had nothing to do with Area 51 or UFOs or anything else. It was a meteor. Right, and we were standing there looking for them to test fly the craft out of Area 51, and this meteor entered the atmosphere and was just spectacular. Blue and red flames and orange and yellow, and as it came down and parts of it burned off and broke off, it just changed all these different colors. It was the largest meteorite that I've ever seen in my life, and it was spectacular.
This thing that we saw was so fast. We just looked at each other, and I said, did you see that? She said, yeah. Did you see that? I said, yeah. It flew from one side of the sky right through the middle of the fireworks and gone in just a fraction of a second. I mean, it
You say there were fireworks? You say there were fireworks?
Yeah, but this went from a totally different side of the sky and went right through the middle of the fireworks. And, I mean, it was so fast that if you would have blinked, you'd have never seen it.
Hmm.
It was, and one other thing, when they were building the atom bomb, Oppenheimer said that he had seen green fireballs out there and that they attacked the workers out there. That they would, he said the only way, I read this in a book called Matrix 2.
Oh, no. Throw it in the trash. Throw that book in the trash can along with Matrix 1.
Okay.
The Matrix and
that's the truth. I believe it's the truth.
Listen, The Matrix and Matrix 2 were written by John Lear, CIA.
Okay.
And his name, he calls himself, his pen name is Val Valerian.
Right, Valdemar Valdrian.
Yeah, but that's not really his name. He's an officer in the Air Force Office of Special Investigation, which is Air Force Intelligence.
So really interesting reading. I didn't know if it was the truth or not, and I'm glad I got a hold of you so you could tell me.
No, but it's certainly got a lot of people out there spinning their wheels.
Yeah. Hey, can you answer one other thing for me?
Sure. Well, I'll try. I don't know if I can answer it or not. I haven't heard the question.
Since 1991, I have been seeing 1111 on clocks, on train cars. I get checks for $11.11. I see it day after day after day, every month. 1991.
You know what? I never saw a Bronco in my life until I bought one. Then every car I saw was a Bronco.
Okay.
You may be dwelling on 1111.
I've had it described to me like that before. There's a lady in Charlottesville, Virginia that writes a book that has written several books on people that see 1111.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know whether it was baloney or not.
Well, other people see 23 and 1122 and stuff like that, which is 1111.
Okay.
You understand?
Down in the south anytime soon? And are you still up there around Sholo?
I'm going to be right. I've never been in Sholo. Never. I'm right here, and I'm not going anywhere because we have a duty roster rotation, and I have to stand guard just like everybody else.
I hear you, baby. Where are you speaking anywhere anytime soon?
No. No.
Nope. I hate it. I was hoping to get to talk to you.
I'm speaking on the radio.
Well, I'll be listening every night, bro.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. Want to get your 2 cents in? Give us a call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Hello.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you again. I've talked with you before when you were on Alan Handelman's show.
Uh-huh.
And I've got three interesting bits of information for you tonight.
Okay.
One is about the thing that happened there with Princess Diana. And one is about a group that we all know and love. And one is about the Star Wars movie series.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is the place where Princess Diana was killed in. She was killed in the Alma Tunnel.
Uh-huh.
Do you realize the significance of that?
Why don't you tell us?
Okay. Well, Alma is you hear about the Alma Mater. That's when people talk about the schools they went to and things like that. Well, according to Hislop, in his book, The Two Babylons, the Alma Mater is actually referring to the mother of Nimrod, who actually represents Tammuz, or the Enlightened One,
uh-huh.
the ancient legend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, now, the Ku Klux Klan, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the name can actually be broken down into Kuku, which is a Greek form of circle or cycle, and Lux,
yeah.
or circle of light.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now...
Well, it was the circle of light. The Ku Klux Klan was formed from the Knights of the Golden Circle.
You didn't know that, did you? I've heard a little bit of reading in Morals and Dogma, and it's rather interesting.
Yes.
Well, now, also my third point. We've heard a lot about the Jedi Knight.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. Well, now, the interesting thing about that...
That's all on my webpage, but go ahead, anyway.
Well, now, the interesting thing about the word Jedi,
mm-hmm.
it's actually taken from Hebrew. The Hebrew word Yada, which means to know.
Uh-huh.
The Jedi Knight means the knights who know.
Yes, the illumined ones.
The Knights of No, but also referring to the Knights Templar who supposedly found the secrets of the Temple of Solomon
uh-huh.
in Jerusalem
uh-huh.
during the Middle Ages. And also, this is also where the name Yoda from the Return of the Jedi and the Empire Strikes Back is taken from. It's derived from that same word, but it means he who knows.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's just three interesting bits of information I thought I'd let you and your audience have a little bit more about tonight.
Well, good.
Okay, it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get into all that stuff. Because it's really interesting how you are initiated without even knowing it. Just by watching certain shows or certain entertainment activities, such as those in the Luxor Hotel. Which means Luxor, source of light. Luxor, source of light. It has this beam coming out of the top that goes all the way out in space. Pilots can see it forever if they're high enough in the atmosphere all over, you know, this half of the globe. And you go through the 3 degrees of initiation and you come out a Master Mason without portfolio, without even knowing it, when you go in the Luxor Hotel and go through these three little entertainment things. And it's called The Search for the Obelisk. Aha! 520-333-4578. Everybody says that all this Illuminati, adept, occult stuff is baloney. It's not baloney, folks. Those are the people who are the unseen hand guiding the events in the world, and you had better learn about them and their hidden language and how you are manipulated by them and how to read their symbology so you'll know what's going on and not allow your children to watch things like The Lion King and be brainwashed by it unless you're there to explain to them what it's really all about. Oh boy, I bet that got some people's hackles up. I bet it really did. Oh, yes. Let me see. Do we have to do another one of these? I think so. Yeah, okay. I'm just getting the next tape ready for when I have to change it so that it doesn't sneak up on me like the last one did. The last turnover, I mean. Okay. Let's go here and Well, I can't do that because, well, I can do some of this. Let me just scan down here and sort of give you a little bit off of our website for those of you who can't go there or won't go there. I don't know how to get there. The source of the conspiracy will be found in the body known as the Illuminati. It is made up of the highest adepts of the combined total of the so-called fraternal orders and secret societies. They are bound together by blood oaths, a secret religion, and the promise of an elite status within regional government or the world super government. Their religion is based upon the Kabbalah, the Luciferian philosophy, and the worship of the sun. They are not bound by any oath or allegiance save their own. They are loyal to no government or people save their own. And they are citizens of no country save their already in place secret world government. In their own words, ladies and gentlemen, if you are not one of us, you are nothing. To garner some sense or feel for the concept, see the movie They Live. And understand that the movie They Live is fiction, but it gives you the concept of how this is being carried out very clearly. You can't miss it. But you cannot ever hope to understand the philosophy, Illuminism, of any branch of the mystery school, the Illuminati, without many years of study and a complete knowledge of their symbolic language, and you all must learn it. You must understand that, like many other organizations, they also attract those who completely miss the boat. They have people within their organizations who don't understand any of it either, or else they're just too stupid to get it. When an individual joins a branch of the Brotherhood, by any name, I don't care what name you want to call it, Freemasonry, the Theosophical Society, the Anthroposophic Society, the Fraternitas Rosicruci, the Knights Templar, the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta, or any other fraternal order or secret society, no one, ladies and gentlemen, ever sits down with them and explains the meaning of anything. You see, an actual, literal, esoteric education would be too dangerous. It could result in a public expose, something which the Illuminati must avoid at any cost. But to give those who might understand a shortcut, listen to me very carefully, Illuminism is communism. The organization of the order is a pyramidal structure of degrees on the bottom of the so-called blue lodges, full of ignorant, materialistic, and opportunistic fools. Promising candidates are chosen to be guided up the ladder of initiation with the help of those who have gone before. The initiate is presented with the objects of study, books, symbols, ritual, and, of course, camaraderie. But illumination must come from within. Each degree of initiation provides a new key to ultimate enlightenment, but only, ladies and gentlemen, for those who can truly understand the ritual and symbols of the degree. Where understanding or the ability to keep the secrets stops, the progress of the candidate stops. Only those above the 29th degree have the ability to understand the ultimate secrets and goals of the order. And when I say 29th degree, I'm talking about the Scottish Rite. It's actually above the 12th degree, the New York Rite. The ultimate secret, ladies and gentlemen, is simply the method of controlling large numbers of fools with the promise of a secret which will make them one of the elect. The goal is the elimination of all religions save theirs, the elimination of all nation states, and complete control and ownership of everything and everyone, everywhere, every moment of every single day. I'm going to turn the tape over now. So.